One name stands out, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.
Well, good morning, everyone. It is another beautiful day here in Cleveland. This is 4 days in a row of 70 degrees, low humidity, not a cloud or a chemtrail in the sky. And it's just been a beautiful time here. We've had a pretty nice summer, even though we've had some hot days. For the most part, it seems like there's been a nice blend between sunshine and beauty and enough rain to keep all the flowers watered and keep the grass green and the trees green. And so it's been a wonderful summer. Good morning. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I want to welcome to you, a warm welcome to all of you who've joined me here this week. You know, for the last 22 years or so, it's been almost 25 years now, I've given thousands of interviews on radio, television, podcast, conferences, seminars, written books, articles, all kinds of things to try to inform people in one way or another about the problems associated with vaccines. But I wanted to get more information out to you, and I wanted to have more of a personal conversation with you. So that's why I decided to do this live Tuesday morning, a podcast called Morning Coffee. You can see it's a coffee shop, a little thing that I put on my green screen behind here. So just think of this as a way that we can get together, cover various topics, gives me an opportunity to answer some of your specific questions, but please remember to make your questions generic. I cannot give you specific medical advice, but we can give you generic overview for the conditions that you're having, so it can be educational and a little bit fun. I wanted to start with something today because it is Vaccine Awareness Month. You know, I don't know. I don't know if it grinds you the same way it does me, but all these awareness months, like Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Autism Awareness, if we at this point in time aren't aware of these conditions, we've been living underneath a rock or with our head in the sand for a long, long time. So, but August is a big vaccination month because we absolutely have to get our kids all vaccinated as we send them back to school. Not. Only California, West Virginia, Mississippi, and Maine have requirements that they have eliminated their medical and their religious exemptions. And so it gets really, really hard in those medical exemptions and their religious exemptions are really tough to even get, even in Mississippi, even though they've changed the laws down there. So there was an article that came out by Epoch Times, and they're usually pretty good. They usually are on top of things, and they seem to be a little bit more open and more progressive to our side, I guess you could say, when we talk about vaccines and the myth of the mask, the fraud of the PCR testing, the pandemic / plandemic, and all those sorts of things. And they put out a big article this last week called ADHD Symptoms, Causes, Treatments, and Natural Approaches, an Essential Guide. And when I read it, I was so disappointed. I mean, it is so far left, super conventional in its approach. I mean, it doesn't talk about, not once in this entire little document that they put together that's a little guidebook, it's 26 pages long, that they talk about vaccines as part of the reason that they is part of the cause. And I've said for the longest time that, you know, when I used to do a lot of talks about autism, I used to say that, you know, autism is at the far end of the continuum scale. Before you get to autism, you have ADD, ADHD, asthma, allergies, insulin-dependent diabetes, a whole list of autoimmune diseases, cancer, all sorts of other things that can be affected, adversely affected in different organ systems in your body, unlike autism that is primarily a brain injury, but it's also a gut injury. And there is that brain-gut connection. And so reading through this, it doesn't talk at all. Really, it doesn't even mention vaccines. It talks about what they think is the causes. Let me just scroll down here a little bit. What causes it? Genetics. This is not a genetic condition. This is not a hereditary condition. I mean, you can have generational vaccine damage and brain damage, but this is not a genetic condition. They talk about brain abnormalities in terms of developmental problems, and that's the reason that kids can't hold their attention. That's not true either. Environmental factors, maternal smoking, maternal alcohol, premature birth, exposures to alcohol, tobacco, and possibly cocaine before birth, brain injury, poor parental mental health, exposure to toxins, conflictive home environment, early childhood trauma, and nutrient deficiency. Where is vaccine injury on that list? I mean, with kids now getting, you know, the regular pediatric schedule has somewhere between 17 and 19 vaccines. I mean, the most recent one that we've always quoted is 17 multiple doses of 17 different vaccines, depending on how you count them. For example, there are two different versions of the rotavirus vaccine that are approved. One of those brands requires three doses, and the other one requires two. In the meningitis vaccine, there are multiple versions of the meningitis vaccine now. There are ones that require two shots, one that requires three shots. There's Munemba, I think is the name of Trumemba, which is hepatitis B vaccine only, which I don't even know how they got that approved, because there's a long list of things that have shown that the reason they never put the meningitis B strain into the quadrivalent meningitis vaccine is because the meningitis B vaccine the meningitis B bacteria has antigens on its surface that are very similar to the antigens in the brain. And when they developed a vaccine for it to go against the antigens on the surface of the meningitis B bacteria, it caused an autoimmune reaction that attacked the brain. So this is a synthetically released, made in a laboratory, meningitis B bacteria that doesn't even necessarily match the one that's out in circulation. So now they've added the RSV vaccine to both adults and children. The RSV vaccine is causing horrendous amount of side effects and complications in adults. And it's probably because most adults have had the RSV infection sometime in their life, primarily during their childhood. RSV for children, they say that somewhere by the time a child is 4 years of age, 98% of kids will have had RSV. And 90%+ of kids will have had a rotavirus infection. It's just a normal, mild illness of childhood. And yet, so if you've had that illness when you were younger, if you had RSV when you were younger, which is just it's like a cold, it's just a respiratory infection, kind of like what COVID was like regular coronavirus infections. And then you vaccinate against it, it causes an autoantibody response and causes a lot of complications. So they've had a huge amount of side effects and complications in the adult RSV vaccine that's not very widely being reported, of course, because they just want people to be vaccinated. They don't really care if it causes a side effect or not. If it causes a side effect, they can sell more drugs to treat the side effect. RSV is only a serious respiratory infection in premature infants. And they've had a vaccine for that for years, for decades. But you had to give a series of five vaccines with that particular vaccination. And it was very expensive. It was like, I don't know, $1,500 a dose or something like that. So they created, they waited, it's been 20 years in development. They created a new RSV vaccine. Again, it's only meant to be for premature infants, because of premature infants and the ultra preemies that are born like 26 weeks and they only weigh like 1 pound, you know, they do have a serious complication if they end up with RSV and end up in the hospital. So it was a very targeted vaccine. But now, of course, they want to roll it out to all children because it's a market share thing. And oh, if we can just stop those kids from having RSV, except it's kind of like chickenpox when they rolled out the chickenpox vaccine. If we can stop having kids have chickenpox, it's 25 times, literally 25 times or more severe if you get chickenpox as an adult, if you haven't had it as a child. Now, that statistic was true when chickenpox was highly prevalent in the environment. But chickenpox is the only known host is humans. So unlike influenza that's carried in birds, and you can see influenza in chickens and cows and all kinds of other wild animals where you really can't eliminate that. Chickenpox was eliminated because what the vaccine was, that it stopped the spread. And so if you can't spread it, it falls apart. And so now there are, I don't know, I think the last time I looked, there's something like 25 reported, because chickenpox is not a reportable illness, but they estimate there might be somewhere between 25 and 50 cases of chickenpox in the country per year. Why are we still giving a chickenpox vaccine? 2 doses, no less. The same thing with measles, that, you know, for the most part, you know, the measles virus, and I did a research paper on this quite a while ago, that the measles virus has a 4-year life cycle, which means that no matter how high the vaccination rate is for measles, like with MMR, no matter how high it is, about every 4 years, you'll see an uptick in the amount of measles infections that you'll see. That is non-deadly. It's a fever, a cough, a rash, sometimes some diarrhea, goes away within 7 to 10 days and leaves behind a lifetime of immunity, which is particularly important for little girls, so that that natural antibody that they have developed against measles can be passed on in their breast milk. And so it's and so why are we still given MMR? They have estimated there's approximately 3 cases of rubella reported per year. And I often wondered back in the day when I was an ER doc, which was a long time ago. I mean, I stopped working in the ER in 1998. That's a long time ago. But you would see these little kids come in. They didn't look particularly sick, but the parents brought them in because they had a fever and a rash. And they were running around the room, tearing up the room, playing with their toys, doing whatever, and were not one speck sick. But they had a temperature of about 101, 102. And some red spots. And I often wondered, is that measles or is that rubella? I mean, they're not sick. And so we are continuing to vaccinate just because we can and because we do. It's part of the schedule. Pediatricians have bought into it, lock, stock, and barrel. And so we have these vaccines that we're doing forever. And they all have the potential to cause asthma, allergies, eczema, ADD, ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes, a long list of autoimmune diseases, cancer, and of course, autism. I mean, the autism rate in the country right now is about 1 in 36 children have autism, which is a brain injury. They've done their best over the years to try to normalize autism and make it be just, call it neuroatypia, that kids are just a little bit different and a little bit quirky and maybe a little bit weird. But it's a brain injury. You know, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys is a really good friend of mine, and I remember when she and I used to talk about this back in the day, and she said that she thought that the ADHD, that they made these vaccines with all the horrifying ingredients in them, like polysorbate 80, like Tritan X100, formaldehyde, of course, the huge amount of aluminum, and the multi-dose flu shots still have mercury. And now with the COVID vaccine they put on the pediatric schedule, has these lipid nanoparticles, the mRNA with the pseudouridyl that continues to replicate. I mean, and all the other things like graphene oxide, all the different things that are in the horrible COVID vaccine that we want to give to children, and of course, pregnant women. So any one of them, because you are injecting chemicals into children, into infants, there's this thing called Combo 10, where if a pediatrician's office can give every dose of 10 vaccines to a child, every child by two, they get a reward from that, from Blue Cross Blue Shield, and probably from other insurance industries too. So why this piece of literature, I guess you would call it, or why this they're calling it a guidebook for ADHD, and it's interesting that they're bringing it out now right before school starts, because school already started Monday in Florida. So they're bringing out this, it's called the Essential Guide for ADHD. And they're bringing it out right as school starts, and as kids get pummeled with another round of vaccines before they start school. The subtitle on this essential guide is about 9% of American children have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and one third of those will have it continuing into adulthood. No mention of vaccines. All 17, 18, 19 of them. And it's good news. I had heard the other day, I did an interview with Ben Tapper. And I'm sure a lot of you know Dr. Ben Tapper, and I was on his podcast show. And he said that he had just read an article that 60% of parents are now questioning vaccines of whether they are necessary. And it's pretty interesting, because that's a very similar stat back in about 2013, so 10 years ago. Parents were really questioning, because I really thought, naively maybe on my part, that if I just worked hard enough, and those of us that were spreading the word worked hard enough to disseminate the truth about what's coming through that needle, that we would reach a critical mass. And sooner or later, people would just say, no, thank you. I don't want, I know how to take care of a fever, a cough, and a rash using homeopathy, using herbs, using home remedies, letting the body just do what it does and to get a lifetime of immunity out of it. I don't want to inject my kids with all this stuff. And I really believed that at some point we would reach critical mass on that. And when we got reached the critical mass, that parents would just stop. They just say, no, thank you. This has been a systematic poisoning of the human race since 1798, when Jenner developed the smallpox vaccine. And that people would educate and read and understand. And sadly, that really hasn't been the case. I don't know if parents just don't like to do their own research, if they want to just blindly trust the powers that be. And you would specifically think that when we went through what we did with COVID, that people would no longer just blindly trust white-coated individuals or trust anything that comes out of the CDC or the FDA or the NIH, for that matter. That is just so pro-pharmaceutical industry. So I just really thought that eventually parents would just say no. My theory was that if you were a manufacturer and you made light bulbs and everybody switched to LED and they didn't want light bulbs anymore and they stopped buying light bulbs because they had no use for them, or they were dangerous, like every 100th light bulb would just blow up in their living room and cause damage or injury to people, that eventually they would just stop buying light bulbs and the light bulb industry would go away. That was kind of my premise, thinking that, every 100th shot, because they say 1 in 100 causes severe damage of any, whatever the vaccine is, that they would just stop and just say, no, we're not going to continue to poison our children. We're not going to be afraid of a fever, a cough, a rash, some diarrhea. We're just not going to do it. we're going to, you know, go back and dig out Dr. Mendelsohn's book that came from the 1980s. That was the title of the book was something akin to How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. Learn something a little bit about nutrition and homeopathy and herbal medications. Talk to your mother and your grandmother, and if she's still alive, your great-grandmother, about what sort of home remedies did they use, because they obviously worked because generationally you're still alive. When you had a fever and a cough, or you had the measles, or remember back in the, you know, in the 50s, when measles was considered a nuisance disease, 500,000 kids got measles per year. There was a thing with herd immunity in measles that said that if you, the number of kids in a community that it had measles fell below 2/3, then you would see an uptick of an outbreak of measles again. And it appeared as though that natural immunity from all of those kids that had had measles protected the younger kids, the babies and the infants, until they got older to where measles was a age-appropriate infection, like around 9 years of age. And, and you know, I won't even go into the nasty group of people that talk about virus versus no virus. I like what Suzanne Humphrey said about it when I did an interview with her on my podcast. We did it on Brighteon. It's still available. It was on Brighteon. It's available on my Substack. It's also available on Brighteon. When we got to talking about this contentious group of virus versus no virus people, and she said, I think in her words, these were Dr. Suzanne Humphrey's words. She said, I believe that those people are the woke people of the health freedom movement. They have an opinion, and they want everybody to agree with their opinion. And if they don't agree with their opinion, they go after them with nasty grams. I mean, I still get messages on my social media almost every day. Anytime we post something, I can't believe, Dr. Tempity, you still believe in viruses. I haven't had any proof that they don't exist. I think it's a theory that somebody just came up with. And so I'm coming out with a new book. It should come out within the next couple of months about the playbook that they've created, the template they've created for pandemics. And there's a section in there where I actually addressed this new controversy about saying there's no such thing. They haven't shown any proof of it. And I explained my way that I've defended the fact that I do believe viruses exist. Now, there are complications and problems with virology. There's complications and problems with the way that they are listed and cataloged. There's complications with ways that they are identified or not identified. They want to hang their hat on the whole Koch postulates things. Well, Koch postulates came out before viruses were even identified. And there's a whole set of rules that don't apply. And I talk about that in the book. And the book should be coming out, well, with any kind of luck, I'm done writing it. It should come out in the next couple of months. And of course, you guys will be the first to hear about it. It's going to be, Suzanne's writing a foreword for me. And she said, you've talked about things in this book that nobody else is really talking about. So I'll just plant that seed out there with you guys who are listening this morning and make it a little bit of a suspense factor that it's stuff that nobody else is talking about. And I'm not going to blow my cover by talking about it ahead of time. So, anyways, ADD, ADHD is food dyes, too much sugar, and vaccine injury, as far as I'm concerned. And that's the way we've always treated it at Tenpenny Integrated Medical Center, the way we continue to treat it with SRT, our food allergies, the way we treat it with looking for what vitamins are missing, and stop vaccinating. That's the way it is. And these whole things about genetics and all these other things are just sad that this is what they talk about, what they really talk about, which is really kind of interesting. Our natural approach is using herbs and dietary supplements, elimination diets, yoga and meditation in a five-year-old, you know, interactive metronome training, neurofeedback, outdoor activities, reduce stress and screen time. Then it says, how can I prevent ADHD? Doesn't say anything in here about avoiding the vaccines. So that's kind of my morning introduction and kind of a little bit of my morning rant, because I think that that's sad, because Epic Times has a huge circulation, huge circulation. A lot of people believe what they read there, like I do. I think that for the most part, they have good articles. I used to be a contributor there. we do different things now. I wrote for them for a while. They got a different editor and things changed, but that's the way it is. So let's get on to some questions here. We have some questions in our Q&A here this morning. Does anybody want to make any comment or say anything about the ADHD thing before we go on? Anything you see in there, Cookie?
No, I don't see any comments specifically regarding that. But I will say when my son was younger, and we all know he was vaccine damaged. I learned the hard way. But when he was younger, you know, he was still just a little boy. Once he started regaining how to walk and everything, he was a little boy, an active little boy. And every time I would take him in, because he had to have evaluations and, you know, the whole spiel. But they always tried to medicate him, saying that he had attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And I'm looking at them and telling them, no, he doesn't. He's just a little boy. And as he grew up, he's 11 now, but he grew up. And you can see that although he has his own issues, there was no ADHD, no ADD. He was just a little boy. So I think part of it sometimes too is even when they're not damaged, it's just, they're just being little boys and girls, exploring things, curiosity blooming into everything. And they just want to medicate. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Cookie, that ADHD is just a clinical diagnosis. And sometimes kids get diagnosed with that when they're in school because they're fidgety and all this, because they're bored out of their mind. They're smart and they, you know, whatever the teacher is droning on about doesn't apply to them. And they're really smart. And so they're really super bored. And so they aren't really paying attention. They're looking out the window or they're fiddling with their pencil or whatever. And then they get labeled with ADHD and they want to medicate them. That's another element of this this problem that is not addressed appropriately, in my opinion. So the first question here is, I take 50 milligrams of zinc, gluconate, and quercetin for preventive purposes. Is there a different form of zinc that I would suggest a change to? Joanne, I don't know why you would want to change that. The gluconate is the carrier on zinc, and gluconate is highly absorbed in through the gut. So you've got a really absorbable form of zinc that you're taking. I might say that one of the things you might consider is the is the Optiimmune that we have in our store, just because it has all the things in it at one time that you like and that you need for prevention. It's got zinc, quercetin. I think there's vitamin D and vitamin C and something else that might be in there. And so you can get all of it in just two pills instead of taking a whole litany of things. And it's one of our best sellers. It has a lot of information and stuff, or a lot of good stuff in it that you can take in just one supplement. It's called Optiimmune, and Cookie will put the link up there for you. Dorothy asks, what are my thoughts about urine therapy and more specifically on a daily basis to urine therapy on a daily basis to maintain good health? Well, we've talked about this a little bit before in the past. I have talked about this with various doctors, and I think it's Dr. Ely that promotes it. You know, Dr. Pilevsky and Dr. Merritt on the Five Docs did this urine therapy thing for a while. And me and Dr. Carrie Madej were absolutely grossed out by the whole thing. And here's the thing. Urine is one of your body's waste products. It's like your poop. It's like your stool. It's a waste product. And anything that that your body's trying to get rid of filters through your kidneys and goes out into your urine. If you're taking medications, the metabolic byproducts of that medication gets filtered in your kidneys and goes out in your urine. If you've got leaky gut and you've got stuff that's coming out of your gut, it gets filtered and goes out into your urine. It's a metabolic waste product. And so I'm not an advocate. I'm not a fan. just based on physiology and biochemistry alone. I mean, people can stretch that and twist it any way that they want, but I think there's a lot of other things that you can do for your health and other supplements you can take and other food you can take rather than consuming one of your body's waste products. I know this is really a gross example, but would you eat poop? Would you eat poop to get any nutrients that were left over that maybe you didn't get absorbed the first time? I don't think so. So I'm not sure why people would want to drink urine. That's my opinion on that. That's just my opinion. And I've had lots of other people that have agreed with me. So how to treat cold sores naturally. L-lysine is a supplement that stops the cold sores that are there. If you can find it, we used to carry this in our practice, but they discontinued the product line. It's a product by Apex Energetics. It comes as a spray. It's got a little purple. It's about the same size as the Pure Body spray. It has a little purple label on the front of it. There are a lot of people that are selling it on the secondary market. I'm sure that they maybe just had leftover products in their inventory because it's homeopathic and it never expires. They have to put an expiration date on it, but it really doesn't ever expire as long as it stays in a temperature constant place and the seal stays on it. There's a product that worked magically for getting rid of cold sores. It was called HERPA Pro, HERPA-PRO, HERPA Pro. And you can go do a Google search or look around for it, and you will be able to see where you might be able to find that. It's a spray, and we used to sell a ton of it in our office. We used it for chickenpox and shingles and cold sores. You just spray it on the cold sore, and just within a couple of days, it'd be completely gone. So it's available out there. I've recommended it to a few friends of mine. And so that's available out there. L-lysine is a supplement, a single supplement. I think we have it in our store that you may be able to do that. And then there's a new product that a new vendor that we're working with, it's called Micronic Silver. Micronic Silver is a product, and they have, they are a really important new type of silver product, and you can get it as a spray or as a liquid. If the cold sore is really tender, that you could just put it on a cotton ball and just sort of dab the silver on right on there, or they have it as a gel. They have these gels that just works for acne and bites and like mosquito bites and bug bites and things like that. That is called Oleazone, Oleazone. And if you click on the link and you go to the Micronic Silver and use the DRT as your affiliate code, which is what our affiliate code is for all of the products that we recommend, DRT, you'll get 10% off. And I'm telling you, this stuff, it lasts a long time. It's really good stuff. And I've even given it to Tegan. I have a little liquid bottle. And sometimes he acts like he has a little bit of a urethritis or a little bit of a bladder infection that's going on with him. I'll put a little bit of it in his water in like a day or two, it's completely gone. So it's really, really a good product. And that's why we set up an affiliate relationship with them. They have gels and creams and liquid sorts of things. They have sprays. So you can look at their link and say that it works like magic. Michelle says it works like magic. She uses it a lot. I have in the liquid bottle, and I also have a gel form of it. And it's one of those things that it's like vitamin D. It's one of those like vitamin D 5,000. I'm sorry, vitamin D 50,000. 50,000 IUs of vitamin D. It's you should have that in your medicine cabinet. Because if you start to get sick, you want to take 100, you know, like a viral flu influenza sort of condition. You want to take 100,000 units of vitamin D a day. That's 100,000 units. That's not a typo or a misstatement for 3 days, just 3 days, not ongoing. It's just a way to beef up, punch up that vitamin D level and get it really, really high, really fast. You take 100, and as 50, even when you have, and instead of taking 10 pills or more of the lower doses of vitamin D. If you have the 50,000 IU of vitamin D in your cabinet, then you only have to take 2 a day for 3 days to punch up your vitamin D level. And so that's one of the things you should have in your normal flu season, coming into winter season, a medicine cabinet, herbal medicine cabinet, is a 50,000 IUs of vitamin D. And I would put some of this my chronic silver in there because you can't go wrong. It kind of takes care of everything. best treatment for arthritis in your hands and your feet? You know, it depends. That's a pretty big question, Agnes. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, arthritis is an inflammatory condition. So you want to the first place to start is with a low inflammatory diet. And there are books out there that are available on a low inflammatory diet, but take out gluten, take out dairy to start. You know, there's a lot of gluten-free products now that are really super tasty. I get gluten-free crackers, and I've got a big bag of gluten-free flour. I think it's made from amaranth. And I keep that bag of gluten-free flour. I keep it in the refrigerator. I'm sorry, in the freezer, because I don't use it very often. I don't cook with flour things very often. But when, you know, you want to thicken some gravy, or you want to bread something to put it in the oven, like some fish, you know, I use a little bit of it. And so it keeps it fresh by keeping it in the freezer. If you just keep it in your cupboard, eventually it'll have bugs and moths and things like that in it, unless you're using a lot of it. But there's gluten-free flour. Do what you can to eliminate gluten from your diet. And every once in a while, I'll cheat on something, like maybe an ice cream cone. I allow myself, you know, a junky ice cream cone once a month, because I just really, really like it. And you can't live in a constant state of depravity all the time. So I'll do that once in a while. And I always regret it. My stomach always hurts and is bloated. My joints hurt. But gluten really makes my joints hurt. And that's when I first realized that I had a big gluten sensitivity, because it wasn't really arthritis, but it was arthritis-like pain in my, it would make my toes hurt. So I cut out gluten. I cut out dairy. You know, for the most part, I'm probably 90% dairy-free. I eat like vegan ice cream, and I've got like dairy-free cheeses. And the only thing that I still eat is real raw whole butter in terms of dairy, and it doesn't seem to bother me. But low inflammatory diet. And then I don't know if you've tried it yet, but try some glucosamine and MSM. Glucosamine is one of those all or nothing supplements. Either it really, really works, and it's about 500 milligrams twice a day. And either it works and it works quickly, like within a week or so, or it doesn't work at all. And if it doesn't work at all, you haven't heard anything. The only thing, you're out a little bit of money for the supplement. Pass it on, give it to somebody else to try if they've got some aches and pains or some back pain or something like that. But try glucosamine, and MSM really does help because MSM is an elemental sulfur. And the sulfur, we all are sulfur depleted in our body, because our body uses sulfur to detoxify things out of our system. So it's really, really important to try MSM and glucosamine first and foremost is diet. Next question. Is it possible to speak about lupus and general ideas for how to resolve it? Again, lupus is an autoimmune disease that's highly inflammatory. And something kicks that off. Quite frankly, it's been my experience that what causes lupus or lupus-like syndromes, what I used to see it in the office all the time, was either a food allergy, again, like what I just told Agnes about low inflammatory diets. I would start with a low inflammatory diet. In fact, I think I think Dr. Tom O'Brien, who's a friend of mine, wrote a book called the Autoimmune Fix. And his book is really super good, and it's a low inflammatory diet. Lots of ideas about gluten-free sorts of things. It's called The Autoimmune Fix is the name of the book. You can get it on Amazon. You can get a lot of different places. It's been out for a while. But I would start there, start with diet, and no more vaccines, because vaccines and all their ingredients are pro-inflammatory, and it will just exacerbate the lupus. Boy, I got a lot of morning grunge there. I'm trying to get rid of in between. I put it on mute so I don't blow out your eardrums. So next question is, what might cause ears to drain a clearish liquid at night when you're lying down? This in turn makes a flaky situation in the ear. It could very well be a little bit of an infection, of inflammatory reaction that's going on in your ear canal and with your eardrum. And the flakiness is generally because the ear canal gets dried out. I would try some colloidal silver, you know, like the Micronic silver that I talked about earlier, or some other types of colloidal silver. Put a couple of drops in it and make sure it's at room temperature. You don't want anything that you put into your ear to either be really warm or really cold. You want it to be room temperature or just above room temperature, and put it in your ear at nighttime with just, you know, externally a little bit of a cotton swab, and do that every night for a week or so and see if that doesn't take care of it for you, Mary. Hopefully that will resolve that issue. Marva asks, what do you think about using oral progesterone as a sleep aid? Is there any concern about aflatoxins in peanut oil that they use in oral progesterone? Well, I don't know about the aflatoxins, but the peanut oil can be a real problem in terms of, you know, what they do is it's how they use peanut oil to dissolve the powdered progesterone to make it into a pill or to make it into a cream. So I don't know about the aflatoxins. I would guess not, because it's going to be pharmaceutical grade. I can't confirm that. I mean, I wouldn't go to the bank on that, but my guess is no, if that probably has no aflatoxins in it. But if you're allergic to peanuts or you have any sensitivity to peanuts, that particular brand, to use one that's the over-the-counter prescription one. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but that's the one that you can get the prescription for. It's dissolved in peanut oil. So you can get oral progesterone through a compounding pharmacy, and you can have them dissolve it in various different types of oils. And I wouldn't consider using progesterone simply as a sleep aid, even though the side effect of progesterone, the primary side effect of it is that it makes you sleepy. And so that's one of the reasons why when I would prescribe progesterone, whether it would be the cream or the pill, and I preferred the cream over the pill, but whenever I would use one or the other, I would always make the recommendation to give it at night, because one of the primary side effects is it makes you sleepy. So you take it at night, and a lot of women who are in premenopausal symptoms, or they're having menopausal symptoms, which is the reason to prescribe progesterone, they have disrupted sleep. They don't get good quality sleep. They may sleep an adequate number of hours, but they don't get in a deep enough sleep where they feel like they are rested when they wake up. So progesterone is used for menopausal symptoms of hot flashes, night sweats, vaginal dryness. But it's really not used as a sleeping aid. It's that's one of the side effects of the medication. So I'm not sure. I would not recommend progesterone as a sleep aid. There are a lot of other things that we have in the store for sleep. There's a product that that I used a lot when I first had the stroke, because I was in that category. I never woke up feeling rested. I mean, if I'd be in bed asleep by 10 o'clock and I'd sleep till, I wouldn't get up until 8 o'clock the next morning, that's 10 hours for the amount of sleep that I would normally get, I should feel like leaping tall building in a single bound. But as it turns out, I never felt rested. So I use this product called Sleep Time. It's made by Nutritional Frontiers. I'm pretty sure we have it in our store. It really worked. It really worked a lot. And so I would use products like that, or like lavender oil, or those sorts of things, lavender oil at bedtime, that you can use it topically, or you can use it in your, you can do it as a, you can use it in a bath. You take a bath at bedtime. Sometimes an Epsom salt bath is a bit of a detox. That can be kind of relaxing. Use those sorts of things as a sleep aid, and not, I wouldn't recommend progesterone to take it for sleep. Okay, so now what about a suggested form of magnesium? Any of the forms of magnesium are good except magnesium oxide. You do not want to take magnesium oxide, not because it's harmful in any ways, but because it's not very well absorbed. And magnesium oxide is the is sort of like zinc oxide that you use on your nose when you go to the swimming pool so you don't get sunburned. Well, magnesium oxide or magnesium oxalate, either one of those are not very well absorbed. But any other of the types of magnesium, whether it's gluconate, taurate, glycinate, any of those, those gluconate, glycinate, taurate, those are amino acid carriers. Those are a type of amino acid that the magnesium is bound to that helps you to absorb it better through your gut. So any other type of magnesium is really pretty good. Well, with the sole exception, do not use magnesium oxalate or magnesium oxide, just because, I mean, it's the cheapest form. You'll find it in a lot of multivitamins, particularly very cheap multivitamins. You'll find the find those forms of magnesium because it's really inexpensive, and it's a really inexpensive ingredient to throw into a multivitamin, but you don't get much benefit from it. Let me see. I may not know how to word this correctly, but what are the ingredients to look for in a pharmaceutical world that would indicate mRNA is included? My daughter has been using Ajovy for years in chronic migraine management, and I'm concerned for her many reasons there's a monthly injection. I don't think that there's any label that I can think of. There might be, but nothing I can think of off the top of my head that looks for that. But remember what messenger RNA is used for. Right now, it's used in the vaccine industry. It's not used in anything else at this point in time. And people, they are building it to move into the animal world. You know, there's over 400 vaccines for animals. And they have vaccines for everything. They have vaccines for alligators and raccoons and even for bees. And so it's their next big quest. And they're looking to build a messenger RNA platform for cattle, which has not yet been approved. There is one vaccine that was approved probably 3-4 years ago that they use in pork. But it's a new industry in terms of what they're moving forward. And a lot of people are super paranoid about it because of the COVID vaccines. And it's really good to be vigilant and to stay on top of it, particularly with your doctors that aren't really going to know much about it. But I don't think, but there's probably some language for that, Dorothy, but nothing that I can think of off the top of my head that they're going to give that away readily. But I don't think that it's probably in the Ajovy. That's an educated guess on my part, that it would not be in that medication because that's not what the messenger RNA is used for. What happens when you have a subscription to any of your products? They're out of stock when expected to ship. When they're out of stock, you get a notification that they're out of stock, and it will be shipped when they're back in stock, like any other store. That's the way it works. If you've on a subscription and they're out of stock, that means that they're working on it. Sometimes our supplier is out of stock. That's generally the problem. But as soon as it's back in stock, it will be shipped to you. Okay, that's all the questions that we have in there today. Oh, here comes another one. Oh, I just want to mention, if you are in California or anywhere near Northern California, our ECP studio out there is having another open house this coming Thursday. It's all day. It's all day long. That we're hoping a lot of people will come in and do a mini session, which is about 10 minutes, so you can feel what ECP is all about. And remember, ECP is not just for cardiovascular things. I mean, things that people are concerned about. One of the things, there's a published study on how it helps long-haul COVID. So if you've had COVID and you're still really fatigued and really tired and you just can't get past the brain fog, they have a proven, documented, peer-reviewed study, that a couple of them actually, that show that ECP whether ECP, which stands for external counterpulsation, improves your blood flow, improves your circulation, and really helps to resolve the symptoms of long haul COVID. So long haul COVID is one thing. Macular degeneration, tinnitus has been helped. Vertigo has been helped. Erectile dysfunction has been helped. Renal problems, kidney problems have been super helped. COPD. So you can have other types of health problems that can be really helped. And, you know, we have this thing where we don't really, it's an American thing, and it's been longstanding. It isn't something that just happened, that we kind of look at our bodies as long as it's working, it's okay. If it breaks down, I'll go to the doctor. Well, maybe if you learned a tiny little bit about anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry, not to the level of being a physician or even being a nurse or being a physical therapist or something like that, but learn a little bit about your body. Take some basic courses and learn a little bit about your body. You know, I've said this before a lot, but it bears saying again. In the course of your life, you will have had lots of different cars, probably four or five different houses, maybe even a couple spouses, but you only get one body. Why is it that we don't know much about our bodies and we abdicate that to someone in a white coat and expect them to know what's going on with our anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry? You know, I did a Brighteon show. It's going to be aired in a couple of weeks. Michelle, who did I do? Dr. What was her name? Let's see. I can pull it up.
Sorry, Dr. Tempany, what was your question?
Who was the doctor, pharmacist that I from Florida that I did the Brighteon interview with a couple days ago?
Dr. Lynn Lafferty.
Yes, Dr. Lynn Lafferty. She's a PhD in pharmacy, and she's a self-prescribed investigative health investigator. And she said, you know, that was such a good interview. I can't wait till it's aired so all you guys can hear it. And what she said was that she started this whole thing in integrated health and teaching doctors, young doctors, about vitamins and supplements and herbal products and different things about anatomy and physiology and biochemistry, because she had all these young doctors coming to her and saying, I just spent $500,000 on an education and I know nothing. They've really cut back on anatomy. They barely have physiology courses. They don't teach biochemistry. The pharmacology course, think about this, when an MD gets out of medical school, the primary tool in their toolbox is their prescription pad. That's what they know. Symptom pill, symptom pill, symptom pill. That's what they know. I know this because I did this for 12 years. You don't know about nutrition and lifestyle and supplements and all these other things. And she said that these young doctors were telling her they had 6 weeks of pharmacology. Oh my gosh. We had a full year and a half of pharmacology when I was in medical school. So know a little bit about your body and then learn a little bit about what you can do to take care of it. You know, a lot of people go out and take mechanic classes so they know how to, you know, change their own oil and change a tire if they get a flat tire, or they know what to do with their lawnmower, or they learn a little bit about plumbing so they can fix, say, a leaky faucet. I mean, we do things like this to learn how to take care of things we own. We own this body and we get one of them. We should do a little bit to take care of them. So I say that because our ECP studio is having a full day open house on this coming Thursday. It's in Ventura, California. You can go out there. You can book your spot by calling 805-557-8877. You get a free 15-minute mini on the beds. It generally the reason we do this is we want you to experience it. We're not expecting it to cure you or have any like, oh my gosh, effects, because it takes about at least 10 sessions before you really get rid of some of these symptoms we were talking about. But if you get on the bed, then you know what to expect. So call ECP Studios. If you're anywhere near Ventura, if you're within an hour drive of Ventura, if you're up in Sherwood Oaks or up in Santa Barbara or any of those places in that area, call 805-557-8877 to book your 10-minute, what we call a mini. It's this coming Thursday, at our location at ECP Studios. So it's Thursday, August the 15th. And then next week, we'll be talking about this next week. We also have an open house that's coming up for our clinic in Middlebrook Heights in Cleveland. So if you live in Cleveland or anywhere near Northeast Ohio, or we've had patients that have come from 25 different states to come into our ECP studio, THRC in Cleveland and get better, it's an investment in your health, and we can't say enough good things about it. So we're almost out of time, but and suddenly we just got a flurry of questions that came in here. I got 12 questions that came in that we're not going to be able to answer today. So for those of you that put your questions in here at the last minute, save them for next week. Put them in next week earlier on, and we'll cover them.
So Dr. T, may I interrupt? Before we go, Jillian had asked a question before we started airing. It's the first one in the list of the open questions. Maybe it was before you joined. Maybe you don't see it. I'll read it to you if you would like.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is a GI map test for?
I don't even know what that is. Okay. I don't know. So that was
if a cyst in the ovary were to burst, how dangerous is that?
It's generally not dangerous for the most part. Sometimes it can be if when the cyst ruptures, it also ruptures a blood vessel. That's when it's dangerous, but mostly it's just extremely painful. And sometimes you can end up with free fluid in your pelvis, which also causes pain. It's on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of dangerous, I'd call it maybe a 3 or a 4. It's not life-threatening for the most part. Although it can be if it ruptures a blood vessel. So if you've got an ovarian cyst, it should be something that you take care of and see your physician about for recommendations. Cookie, anything over on...
Nothing on Rumble today.
Okay, nothing on Rumble. Well, the rest of these, because these are all kind of long answered. I will answer Dorothy and say, is ivermectin to be taken once a week for preventive purposes? I personally take it twice a week. I take it on Sunday and Thursday. I have for 4 years. And I just read an article just a couple of days ago that says that was talking about, is there a concern with ivermectin because it's an anti-parasitical? If you take more of it or you take it longer, is there a concern about it disrupting the gut microbiome? And the answer was no, that it's a short-acting drug, meaning that it stays in your system for about 24 to 48 hours, and that your gut microbiome either ignores it or adapts to it. So I take it personally twice a week. I think if you take it at least once a week, it's because it's good for all kinds of viruses too. Is a really good preventive. So we will, there's a bunch more questions in here we're going to have to get to next week. Make sure that when you come on board, put them in the Q&A a little bit earlier. So I want to thank everybody who's been here for joining us today. Thank you to my team, to Cookie and Heather and Diane and Michelle for all the things that you're doing in the background here to keep this all going. They send me messages. I've got a screen that's over here to my right, and the messages come up on the screen. So if those of you who are watching, if you see me kind of looking over to the right, it's what I'm looking at is the messages that they're sending me over there. So I want to thank everybody for coming here today. I love these Tuesday morning coffees. I try to give as much information as I can. And please, when this gets posted on my dr10penny.substack.com, please like and share it. Please help us to spread the word, because we need to grow our list. We need to grow our distribution. So whatever you can do to help to spread the word, we would really appreciate it. So remember, we've got lots of broadcasts where we can talk to you the rest of the week. The Monday morning shows, Michelle's been setting me up with some great interviews with people on this week with Dr. T, Monday morning at 9 a.m. Tuesday night happy hours are really, really good. And remember that starting this month, I'm doing happy hour solo, just me talking about Bible verses and things like that on Thursday night. And starting in September, we will be doing a four-part series with Dr. Judd Burton on the books of Enoch. So you won't want to miss that. That's Thursday night at 6 o'clock. And then of course, Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P is at 7 p.m. on Thursday nights. So until the next time, we'll see you here again next week. Remember to lean into God, trust him for everything. And remember to rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So have a good week, everybody. Goodbye and God bless. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store. Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing, that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero. It could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with, because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity, and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-drt. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-drt.